interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crowe Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Friday to you. And it is the TGIF June 14th edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports kicking off live at Rufino's on the River. Ben Love here, the famous Clint D joining from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Great to have you on 103.7 The Game. And how great was that Game 6 last night? If you didn't have a dog in the hunt, if you didn't have, I guess, a betting slip that went to the window, and you just got to watch it for what it was, absolutely glorious. I'm going to spend the opening 30 minutes of today's program giving you my thoughts and taking yours. So get in often. 706-0111. And what I'll tell you is this. We've never seen a Game 6 or a Finals like that. I'm not saying it's the best of all time. It certainly isn't. But we just haven't seen the complexities that this year brought between the injury-riddled Warriors, right? The dynasty-driven Warriors and this upstart Toronto team that has some interesting history of its own. I mean, a number one seed in the Eastern Conference during the last few years of the LeBron in Cleveland era. Toronto was better in the regular season than it was LeBronto in the postseason. They get rid of the head coach, they swap star players, and they get the first championship in franchise history. But when I say we've never seen anything quite like it, allow me to elaborate. Klay Thompson. Your heart just has to go in your stomach when you see that for an athlete. It has to. For him to tear an ACL 2 games after Kevin Durant tore an Achilles, both of those players. I mean, consensus top, what, 10, 15? At worst, consensus top 20 players in the association going to be on the shelf for a hot while. Durant for all of next season. Yes, I've torn an Achilles. As I've told you, he ain't coming back soon. Thompson could potentially get back a little quicker. Maybe he's a factor in next year's playoffs. But, wow, to go for the gusto, go for the gold Larry O'Brien trophy, and to literally leave it all out there at that type of risk on the highest level, we haven't seen anything quite like that. And Klay was just playing lights out, 30 points in 32 minutes. The guy was balling. He was feeling it. And as I anticipated, it was kind of that cure cancer type of effort at Oracle Arena. When they turned the lights out, hey, they were going to shut it down. That's it. That's all. The place was coming unglued. And speaking of Klay playing well, try not to hurt my shoulder here too much by patting myself on it. But yeah, I'm feeling my X Factor picks that I gave you yesterday when we were at the tap room. I told you, I thought this was a huge Klay game. He just kind of gets that way in game sixes. He certainly was en route to an historic performance. On the other side, I gave you Fred VanVleet. How about 5 triples off the bench and 22 points? They're hard to beat when he's doing that. Doesn't matter if Danny Green is a no-show. Doesn't matter if Kawhi is single digits, really, through the first half, if his offense kind of comes in spurts and really more late in a game like this. When VanVleet comes off the bench with that type of fire from downtown, it's just hard to stop a team. And, of course, I've gotten this far, haven't even mentioned your finals MVP. Now you're 2-time finals MVP. Not consecutive, not even with the same franchise, not even in the same conference. And all that makes it all the more impressive. Mr. Kawhi Leonard, he'll be hated in San Ann. My guess is that cat will sleep at night. He dictated his own terms with the way that went down with Pop, with R.C. Buford, with San Antonio, and yet still came out, I think, looking like a rose and shining on the other side. And he came out on top. And now he's got no bad options going forward. I want to spend a little more time on Kawhi Leonard. Would love to get your perspective as well, because I know there are two sides of this coin. And sports talk radio across this country has been fascinating. Twitter on this subject, fascinating today. And it's not just the San Antonio side. Maybe that's not thrilled with Kawhi Leonard. I'll get your take, and I'll share some of mine. 706-0111, the number to play. Get in while you can. We're talking about Raptors over Dubs in the NBA Finals. As a general rule of thumb, I'm not wild about an athlete dictating terms and forcing his way out when his contract doesn't say that it's his time to do that, right? You could even say, in a large way, that's what Anthony Davis did. So I'll do my best not to be a hypocrite here. But if they had discrepancies on how his injury was being handled in San Antonio, he wanted out, hey, they sent him as far away from San Ann as they could. Not just geographically. As I mentioned, they sent him to another conference. They sent him to a team that was not a threat to them. And that's good business on San Antonio's part. The Spurs did what they had to do. My contention is, you know what? So did Kawhi. And he made the best out of a one-year situation. He's a rental in Toronto, just the same as Anthony Davis probably will be somewhere next year, just the same as Paul George has been recently in Oklahoma City. He's a one-year rental. So my personal opinion, good for him, even better for that franchise. They sacked their head coach, they swapped best players, and they won it all. And for the crowd that wants to come in from off the top rope and say this is more about Golden State being injured than it is Toronto being great, that's some childish-ish right there is exactly what I'll tell you. This Toronto team went through a lot to accomplish what they did. You don't have to like it. I'm not telling you it's a sexy NBA champ. But think about it. Lost their first game in the NBA playoffs this year. Went down in two different series in the Eastern Conference. Had to go past, probably, your NBA MVP for this season in Giannis, the Greek Freak. And oh, by the way, they did that without the benefit of home court advantage. And then they had to go through Golden State. And you say what you want, basically Durantless for the series, except for like 12 points in 13 minutes. Without Klay Thompson for an entire game, what was it, game three? Without Klay down the stretch in the decider in game six, doesn't matter to me. Yes, the Warriors, they certainly had to try and persevere through something that ultimately they couldn't. And we've never seen the theater of these injuries before. Guys putting it on the line, and now they're going to risk pretty important years in their career. Might just mean that Golden State is, I won't say disbanded, but not the juggernaut that they were. In fact, I'll ask you that question on the other side of this break. But as basketball goes, with a lot on the line, last night was tremendous. So I didn't get my wish. I wanted my ultimate Sunday, U.S. Open final round, game seven of the NBA Finals. I didn't get that, but I'll take that because of how awesome last night was coming down the stretch. All right, we got some pretty good guests coming at you today, if I may say so. Between now and 6:35, here's what we're kicking at you. Shamit Dua at 4:30. About 20 minutes from this moment, we'll talk to Shamit Dua of Bourbon Street Shots. His take on the finals, what happens with both of those franchises moving forward, and the latest on the Anthony Davis front, the fact that Durant is injured, the fact that maybe some of these potential high wattage free agents other than AD maybe are staying put. How does that affect his situation and the market for him? We'll ask those questions. Shamit will be our only guest in hour number one. At straight up 5 o'clock, we'll have a season wrap, just like we did yesterday for Hunt Palmer. Today at five, James Moran, Tiger Rag Magazine. He was one-on-one with Paul Maneri yesterday. His biggest takeaways on LSU baseball and what they do for the 2020 season. And I'll probably find a way to do a little Astros-Yankees smack talk with James as well. Our only guest in hour two. Again, that's straight up 5 o'clock. And then at 6, pumped up to take you to Omaha, Nebraska. Hunter Paniagua, the Omaha World Herald. Omaha Hunter, guy who spent a lot of time in South Louisiana. He'll break down the College World Series. It starts tomorrow. You get your preview with Hunter today at 6 o'clock. So big program. Don't you go anywhere. On the other side of this break, a U.S. Open update, and then your sink or swim question of the day. Just getting started. Live at Ruffino's on the River, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before.
Cork. Now the tape.
Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Something special for me. You know how the last year everybody was looking at me. I stayed true to myself and I had a great support system. And once I got here to Toronto, they understood everything and the move kept moving from there.
Kawhi Leonard. He may not sound jacked up in that sound bite. He's got to be after what they just accomplished. Bumper to Bumper Sports back in to Ruffino's on the River on 103.7 The Game. Before your sink or swim question, I want to ask about that Warriors dynasty, that championship window. Before we do that, kind of like we did yesterday, I want to make sure you're kept abreast of the 2019 U.S. Open. Today we got round two at Pebble Beach. CD, how about an update?
Well, we got to start off looking at the leaderboard. Justin Rose, the leader in the clubhouse, he's actually pretty much done for the day already at 7 under. Aaron Wise also finished the day at 5 under. The reason why I'm bringing this up because he's tied up with a bunch of other guys. Some of them are already underway, and that's Scott Piercy at 5 under through 4 holes. And then you got Ricky Fowler, Xander Schauffele, and Louis Oosthuizen. They're all at 5 under, but they'll be starting within the next hour or so. So that's something to kind of keep an eye on as we get close, deeper and deeper into round two. Brooks Koepka tied for 7th, currently at 4 under. And Tiger, he's done for the day at even, for what it's worth. The cut line right now is at +3, so the big cat, at least for right now, looks to be safe from an early exit.
Interesting cluster right now at 5 under, and some of those, as Clint said, yet to tee off. Again, they're playing at Pebble Beach on the left coast. We'll give you updates throughout the program. All right, you probably can guess where we're heading with the sink or swim question. I want to follow up my lead-in, talking Raptors over Warriors. It's an historic championship. But are we done witnessing history on the other side of the ledger? Let's debate that. First, CD, the music.
Love, exciting and new.
Your sink or swim question of the day: has the Warriors championship window closed? Think about the way it's phrased. Has the championship window closed for the Golden State Warriors? Let's have some fun with this. We got a guest coming aboard, Shamit Dua, about 11 or 12 minutes from now. Between now and then, we want to hear from you. 706-0111. Clint, lead us off.
I got to go sink here, Ben, but I'm sinking with a little bit of caution. I think it's all about what happens next with Klay Thompson. I think he's going to wind up probably signing a one-year deal just to kind of stay aboard because he's going to wind up popping up towards the tail end of the season. And, of course, you're wondering what's going to happen with Steph Curry. Is he going to be able to kind of put the team on his back and be able to do what this team is expected to do and make the playoffs every single year out of the Western Conference without a Klay Thompson or even a Kevin Durant, depending on what happens with him and his injury. And he's obviously going to be out for a whole year, but where does he go relative to free agency? Does he stick around and eventually sign a player max deal? I think that championship window is still open, Ben, but trust me, it definitely could be closing really, really quick. Just depends on what happens with those key injuries at the end of the season.
I agree with you. We get to the same result. My math in getting there may be a little different. I do agree. I'm going to sink here. It has not. The championship window has not closed. And it's all about the nucleus. How much of it can they keep intact? I'm not even factoring Kevin Durant in, obviously, because I'm not going to look beyond this 2019-2020 season. I'm strictly looking at the next season to come. Can they win a championship? And my gut right now tells me yes. Am I willing to say with as much authority as I would have this time last year? Will they win another championship? No. because there are new challengers on the block. And we don't even fully know yet who some of the challengers will be. I found it wildly entertaining. One of the Vegas sports books, way too early odds to win next year's championship, has the Lakers at the top at like 4-1. You got to be kidding me. I know what they're suggesting, that the Kang and Rich Paul are about to attract a whole lot of magic to La La Land. But are they really about to become the immediate favorites? So what if they get Anthony Davis? And again, I'm not sure they're the odds-on favorite to land the brow, but let's say they do. They're going to have to give up a lot to get him, including that young nucleus of talent that Rob Pelinka has accumulated, probably including the number 4 overall pick. And if Bradley Beal is part of some 3-team deal, hey, you're not getting Bradley Beal and Anthony Davis out of this if you're the Los Angeles Lakers. So I am very dubious on the proposition that suddenly the Lakers are going to be a big challenger on the block. But even without them, there are others. I'm not sure that this Houston team is necessarily going anywhere. In fact, they could get stronger. We know they've been awfully close. Few others out west I'll be looking at. Portland, Utah. Can they take another step forward? Because some of them aren't that far off. Now, you may look at the Clippers and say they've got a chance. Yeah, I'll take a flyer right now on them. But even in the east, what happens with Toronto? Does Kawhi stick around? Does Philly figure it out? Boston, if they get Anthony Davis, what happens with them? Does Kyrie Irving stay? There are more challengers now than there were at the beginning of the Warriors' run. We know that because for forever and a day, it felt like just Cleveland was going to play Golden State. That's how this thing was always going to end every June. Now it's different. Now there are more challengers. But to say that Golden State's not among them, I think that would be foolish. And if this team brings back Steph, Draymond Green, and they get Klay Thompson back, say, who knows, I don't know, April, whatever, from the torn ACL, that team can absolutely, that core at least, and Steve Kerr at the top, can absolutely, in my opinion, still win a ship. All right, a few more moments in this segment. YP, you people out there in listener land, let's hear from you. Whether you are fired up about what happened last night, whether you could kind of care less, my guess is you have an opinion here. Has the championship window closed? 706-0111. We've got at least one good response so far on Facebook. Let's give some credit to Cullen. Cullen said, as long as Klay, Steph, and Draymond stay together, they'll always be a threat. If Klay re-signs and comes back in March, kind of like what I was saying, and they make the playoffs, then they'll have a chance next year. Yeah, I'm in lockstep, obviously, with Cullen. Now, a few things have to happen there. Klay needs to re-sign. If that doesn't happen, yeah, you break up the Splash Brothers, I'll change my answer to this in a heartbeat. But I still think if one of those big three goes, we know it won't be Steph, the 2-time MVP. He's the backbone of their franchise. But is it possible that Draymond Green walks? I guess it could be. But I think those guys want to get back into the lab and see if they can't figure it out. So for me, no. The championship window has not closed. You know, while I've got a moment or two here, not going to lie, I thought we'd take some calls on this. That's okay. But while I've got a moment, there's some video that's made the rounds. If you haven't seen it yet, absolutely tremendous. And it's post-game, leaving the locker room, going through kind of the tunnels of Oracle, and it's Steph Curry on his phone with Drake. And I'm assuming that they're doing FaceTime because you can, I think at some point you hear Steph make reference to a hat that Drake is wearing. So I would assume that he's FaceTiming Drake. And some of the stuff that was said in that conversation, hilarious. You watch that video and you get why Steph is pretty widely held in high regard and beloved, not just in the NBA, but in celebrity circles. But there was a moment in there, and I can't say it verbatim on radio, but Drake said, And you tell Clay that it's all love, even though last time we saw each other, he called me a bleep. And I'll leave bleep out of it. It's not suitable for radio, but again, you try hard enough, you'll find it on social media. Absolutely hilarious. I love it. The fact that Clay is going in on somebody like that the last time that they were in Toronto. And one other thing I'll say as we head toward our second break of hour one, how fascinating that twice in two nights, Big Four sports, professional sports in this country, the finals were closed out on the road. Game 7, the Blues won at Boston for the NHL Stanley Cup Final. And then last night, I didn't think it would happen. Not with a cure cancer type of attitude going down at Oracle. Closing out the arena. And Toronto went in and took what was theirs. Immensely impressive. Those aren't things that you would or should bet on. Teams closing out finals on the road. But again, it happened for the St. Louis Blues and then last night for the Toronto Raptors, also both first-time champions in their respective sports. Incredibly rare. All right, we'll be right back in. You don't have to take my word for it anymore. We're going to bring aboard Shamit Dua, Bourbon Street Shots, his take on the finals and what is next for David Griffin and the Pelicans as they look to deal Anthony Davis. Don't go anywhere. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming at you as we're live from Rufino's on the River on 103.7 The Game.
Football season can't come fast enough.
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
You little...
Luckily, you have Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love to help get you by.
It's a bit of a psych out. You would think we're heading to New Orleans. I know that's why Clint played that music, but our guy, we're going to catch up with him on the road to the ATL. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in. We're at Rufino's on the River and broadcasting on 103.7 The Game. Quickly, let's get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. He is Shamit Dua, lead writer, Bourbon Street Shots. Shamit, it's great to have you back on the program. How goes the journey to Atlanta?
Oh, you know, we're just on the road trying to make some good time here, but it's been pretty smooth so far.
I find this nationwide debate over Kawhi Leonard and whether or not he's a good guy, a fun guy, it's pretty hilarious to me. But when you consider the last year of his life, kind of forcing his way out of San Antonio, they send him north of the border to somebody they didn't think would ever be a threat to them or maybe even anybody, and then he accomplishes this. How do you reflect upon it? And I guess your thoughts on Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of what you think about how he handled his situation back in San Antonio, at the end of the day, Kawhi Leonard is a winner. He is now a two-times final MVP. He led the Toronto Raptors on an improbable run, beat the defending champions who were on the verge of a three-peat. I mean, this guy just has won at every level, and he holds the highest winning percentage in the regular season out of any NBA player. So I don't think there's much you could say about him other than he's a winner.
I'll ask the obvious follow-up, Shamit. Do you believe he stays in Toronto? Was this enough to where he's got to roll the dice again with Nick Nurse and the Raptors?
Man, that's such an interesting question because I think he's well within his rights to say, look, hey, we won. You're welcome. I'm going to go do my thing now. And I think Toronto wouldn't mind that because they have now won their first franchise championship. And if he wants to walk, then, you know, good for him. But they accomplished their goals. That being said, I find it difficult to see him walking away from that good of a situation. I think they truly love him there. He's going to be a legend for that franchise for years to come, even after he's retired. And I think he stays.
Help us break down the other side of the finals ledger. Golden State, I just asked our listeners in the last segment, is their championship window closed? I don't think that it is, but break down the situations of their star players and what, I guess, decisions face them.
I mean, it's just devastating what that team has gone through with Kevin Durant tearing his Achilles, Klay Thompson with his ACL last night. I mean, that is some of the worst injury luck to come in such a short time to any team. And, you know, that's not something you wish upon any player or any individual or any fan base. That being said, I mean, I think you're right. I think, you know, next year is going to be a little bit difficult for them. I don't think they're going to be in title contention per se. But if Clay and Kevin Durant come back, and I think Golden State is planning on offering them both maximum level contracts. So, you know, maybe 2 years down the road, they're looking at, hey, let's go do this again. We have unfinished business. But it's still, there's a lot of question marks up in the air. How are they going to come back from the injury? You know, how are Draymond and Steph going to look in a couple of years? Or is Draymond even going to be on the team? There's a lot of uncertainty there, and I think the title window is wide open next year, at least, for anyone in the West and even anyone in the East. I mean, if you're the Houston Rockets, aren't you thinking, like, wow, this might be our year next year?
Talking NBA basketball with Shamit Dua. Does a fantastic job, Shamit does, with Bourbon Street Shots. All right, one more that kind of, I guess, maybe connects us to Anthony Davis and the Pelicans. This injury specifically to Durant, how does that impact this free agency period, and is there kind of a trickle-down effect to the market for, and I guess teams that might be able to put their hat in the ring for Anthony Davis and his services?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, for starters, there's one less superstar on the market. And now that Kawhi Leonard has won and the possibility of him staying in Toronto has opened up, that's another superstar that might not be on the market. And if you take those two guys off the market, who is the best available player? And that, the answer is Anthony Davis. And if you're one of those big market teams that has a lot of cap space and you know, you've tried your luck with getting stars and you haven't had much success, then I think your eyes are going to land on Anthony Davis as the single most available player, and I think teams are going to go out and get him. I think there's a lot of teams with a lot of cap space out there, but not enough stars.
And we'll keep that train going. I believe that you were the first, Shamit, to report that Bradley Beal is a primary Pelicans target. How would you see a multiple-team deal working out to where the Pels land him?
Those deals are typically going to be very complex because you're trying to meet the objectives of three different teams. Obviously, the Lakers are trying to push for title contention, as well as the Celtics, and the Pelicans are trying to acquire assets but still trying to remain competitive. And a team like the Wizards, it might be time for a full rebuild for them. With John Wall and his Achilles injuries, they don't have a very promising cap situation. They just don't have a good pathway to success. So a three-team deal might look something like you take the number four pick along with a couple of the young players, maybe Lonzo Ball and Kyle Kuzma, and you send them to Washington. You send Bradley Beal and perhaps Washington's own pick, number 11, and Brandon Ingram from the Lakers to the Pelicans, and, you know, Anthony Davis goes to the Lakers. So something like that, perhaps, where Washington gets the four pick, which is going to be, you know, a way much better pick than they have, as well as a couple of young players, and then the Pelicans kind of get the mixture of picks, young players, and that all-star that David Griffin's been looking for.
Man, what an absolute mishmash of pieces that would be, and I'm not saying I hate it. I'll ask you this follow-up question, and I've kind of wondered this aloud on the program, Shamit. Is it possible that there is a deal in place with Boston? Because why would we even know about it? Seriously, if it can't get done until the end of this month when Boston's able to kind of do some of their business, is it possible this thing's already kind of on ice and we just don't know?
I don't want to say it's not possible. I'd say it's unlikely. I do think that if a deal was done, we would have heard about it because there's really no point in kind of keeping that secret unless there's, like, conditions that have yet to be met. And so, you know, those conditions could be like, okay, we're waiting on Boston to entice a third team. Maybe the third team is Washington. You know, we're waiting on Boston to do one or two, three things. And if they don't do those few things by a certain date, then they're like, all right, you know what? We weren't able to get that stuff done. Here is another asset in its place. So, like, you know, if they weren't including Jaylen Brown before, they're like, all right, we weren't able to reach this agreement by this certain time. Here's Jaylen Brown instead. That's the only framework where I see, you know, the deal being done, quote unquote, but not done yet. But I just don't think it's likely. I think Griff is still waiting out and trying to get the best possible offers.
Coming down the stretch with Shamit Dua. You should follow him if you haven't yet on Twitter. His handle, @FearTheBrown. Does your gut tell you, Shamit, that David Griffin, Trajan Langdon are drafting more than once in the first round on Thursday?
Yeah, I'll go ahead with yes. I think they will have one additional more pick in this year's draft.
Okay. And look, obviously it goes back to how much scouting that they've, you know, been able to do at their previous stops, talking about those two guys, Griffin and Langdon, the time that they were able to spend at the draft combine. But I would imagine from your perspective, you feel pretty good that, hey, if they have to pull the trigger and they land a pick a day or two before the draft, that these guys are ready to roll.
Absolutely. I mean, these guys have been tasked with finding the best possible players for the team, and their staffs are extremely thorough. They've gone through pretty much every player statistically and through their film. And, you know, even if they haven't had a chance to interview or work out some of the players, you know, things, situations like that do arise. Teams, you know, targeting certain players in certain ranges, and all of a sudden a player that's not in their range falls to them, and you can kind of jump on that opportunity. So I think they're more than prepared.
Always fun to catch up, Shamit. I appreciate you doing this on the road. Hopefully this conversation got you from, like, Mississippi to Alabama to Atlanta as quick as you can. Nothing in between is all that great.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks, man.
Shamit Dua, Bourbon Street Shots. Not hating. Spent a lot of time in Mississippi and Alabama. Why? Well, because I'm usually driving from Louisiana to Georgia or vice versa. Yeah, there are some things worthwhile in between. But usually it's better to get from one of those extremes to the other. My two cents. All right, we're going to hit our final break of the hour. When we return, time to take our first call. We're ready for it. 706-0111. I also can update two Astros that will begin rehab assignments tonight. Both of these very big deals, big name players. I'll get you that when we return. You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Each and every Friday, we're celebrating life with you from Rufino's on the River.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with.
Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports
on 103.7 The Game.
Here we go, back in with more on TBS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from Rufino's on the River, and always on 103.7 The Game. Phone line's open for you, 706-0111. But I did promise you an Astros update. In fact, there's actually an update to the update. Jose Altuve, Colin McHugh will both start rehab assignments at AAA Round Rock tonight. That much I knew about an hour ago. Here's the update to the update. A.J. Hinch has said Colin McHugh will throw one inning tonight. The Round Rock Express have tweeted out in the last couple of minutes that Jose Altuve will play seven innings out of tonight's ball game. Not bad. And when you consider the MASH unit that is Houston, and the Astros right now, 17 games above 500, no questions asked, one of the best teams in the AL, in the bigs, and yet, boy, they've got a lot of folks they'd love to have back in the lineup. Everyday players, offensively, looking for Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, George Springer, and Aldamas Diaz. Now, I'm not sure that Diaz is quite as important now that Yordan Alvarez is up, but those are four guys just off the top of the dome that, yeah, they want to get back into the everyday lineup. One of those guys has been an MVP in the last 2 years. The other was playing like one this season before getting injured. And then there's McHugh. And if you heard me along with Blaine Viator yesterday, we gave our thoughts on the most important guys that they really need to inject back into this lineup. At the top for both of us, George Springer. A 1A, at least for me, I think Blaine kind of, you know, adopted my line of thinking. But he did agree that 1A or 2, whatever you want to call it, it's Colin McHugh. This rotation needs arms, quality arms, experienced arms, just needs to be bolstered. There's nothing wrong with it. You look at the way they're winning games, and, I mean, look, they went for a while with Corbin Martin, knowing that the youngster was only going to throw 2-3 innings, then they chase it with Framber Valdez. They won games that way. So the overall depth of this team, the unexpected boost that they've gotten from the catcher position, Robinson Chirinos has been a godsend so far. I'll continue to tell you they've got one of the best two or three bullpens, back ends of a bullpen that anyone's got in baseball. And yet they're still waiting for some of these guys to return. So, Clint, I'll get your reaction. Jose Altuve will play 7 innings tonight. Colin McHugh will throw 1 inning. And all these guys getting ramped up, I think just about all of them, with the possible exception of Carlos Correa, should be back prior to the All-Star break.
And that should be that's absolutely huge whenever you consider the fact I want to see these guys be back in the lineup heading into the All-Star break, because obviously they're probably not going to wind up playing because they don't want to kind of risk it a little bit. But I still think you wind up having these guys ready to go in place. You can really start making a run and start making some real hay in the second half of the season when the games count a lot more.
I'm not sure I followed you there. You're suggesting that they're going to call them back up from AAA and then not play them before the All-Star break?
No. I'm talking about the actual All-Star game itself.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. No, these guys are going to play.
Yeah, I'm talking about the actual games.
Once they get caught, the actual games that count for their actual season, they're going to come up and be plugged back in. Now, some of them may get the occasional day off, and I'm all for that. And that, again, is part of the beauty that is Yordan Alvarez, because if he is the everyday DH, that's great. But then occasionally, if he needs to slide into a spot and give a breather to a couple of these guys that are returning, that's absolutely in order, at least as far as I can see it. So the Strohs tonight, starting a new set. Yeah, we know. They split with an underrated Milwaukee Brewers team. They had last night off, getting back in action tonight. And Toronto comes to town. And, yes, that means that Craig Biggio's son, Kevin Biggio, going to be taking on Pop's old squad. Try to talk a little bit more about that later in the program. But there was at least one quote, and I don't have it pulled up on Twitter, so mea culpa. But I'll give the credit to Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle and then paraphrase. Basically, Kevin Biggio told the media about an hour ago, the only thing I'm looking for tonight is to give the Astros 3 losses this weekend. Love it. Fiery competitor, just like his dad, a Hall of Famer and a lifetime Houston Astros. So Craig Biggio's son coming back to play at Minute Maid tonight. Pretty cool. And I'm sure for Pops, sure for that family, it's a big moment for him. And in fact, I'll take it a step further. If you recall the interview we had going out to Minute Maid Park a little less than a month ago, Richard Justice was on the show. And Richard Justice said, look, he's kind of like all of our son, talking about Kevin Biggio. We watched this kid run all around, you know, the old Astros home. I mean, the guy was everywhere. There we go, CD. Thank you. Astrodome. I forgot. They're trying to turn it into like a casino or something else, so I don't ever go there anymore. But, yes, the old Astrodome. And he said it was like all of those guys were watching their kid kind of grow up before their eyes. So now he'll be out there and playing for real. Again, the team, the Toronto Blue Jays, they're not too for real at the moment. But you can only handle what is in front of you. All right, I've carved out a little extra time. Let's wind down. Hour number one, and we'll do that with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make 2 chairs turn.
Unlikely. And this will just cap off our first hour. We started talking about the championship for Toronto. Remarkable, and how unlikely that it was from the time that they got rid of Dwayne Casey, brought in Nick Nurse as the head coach, swapped out DeMar DeRozan, their franchise player. Wonder how he is feeling at this exact moment. Just so unlikely from the onset, and really, even while it was happening, pretty damn unlikely to me. And I mentioned falling behind in a couple of series in the Eastern Conference playoffs. You know, starting out as the team with home court advantage, but still a huge underdog in these NBA finals to the two-time defending champs. So nothing about this was as scripted. And now Kawhi Leonard has put his name out there as one of the best, I don't know, you tell me, two, three, four, five players in all the NBA. And as fate would have it, one of the other guys that belongs in that conversation without question, Kevin Durant, going to be on the shelf because his team, the Juggernauts, lost to Kawhi and the unlikely champion, Toronto Raptors. Still crazy to say that. And some of the headlines that have come from north of the border, some are better than others, but one, party like it's 27 million BC. All right, that's really, really funny. The other one, prehistoric, yeah, that one probably needs a little bit of work. So the headlines, hey, we all expect that, right? I'm a sports writer. I get it. I know how their minds work when they write copy and they write headlines. But the title, I don't think any of us saw that coming. Very unlikely. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by The Village Station. They are your final stop to fill your stomach and tank when you head home on Maurice Avenue. We're coming right back in with James Moran talking LSU baseball on the other side. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live at Ruffino's on the River on 103.7 The Game.
Give your family great TV.
Oh, that's nice.
Interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
It's time to get you ready for LSU baseball. Step into the on-deck circle with James Moran on 103.7 The Game.
We are off and running. Hour two of three underway. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, hanging out live at a great place to celebrate life in Acadiana, Ruffino's on the River. Glad to have you on 103.7 The Game. You just heard the intro, and here's a small tear moment for you. It'll be the final time you hear it this spring / summer. It has been a blast, and one more time, we'll have some fun. Let's welcome aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline, James Moran, editor of Tiger Ag Magazine. One more time in the on-deck circle. Sound good to you?
Sounds good to me, Ben. How are you doing today?
Hey, things are good here. I know the ending wasn't great in Baton Rouge, but as Palmieri met with the media yesterday and started to put a bow on the season, anything really stick out to you? I know it was a very newsworthy presser, but what maybe stuck out to you more than anything?
Some big picture things that kind of caught my attention were, we'll start with like really the broad strokes. He said he didn't anticipate any big change to the coaching staff. There were some rumors, but I don't think that's super shocking. You know, keep an eye on that all summer, but I wouldn't be shocked if pretty much the whole staff returns next season. I don't really anticipate any big picture changes or anything like that. What was really interesting to me, though, is that as opposed to a lot of years, all of their pitchers are pretty much taking the summer off, and I'm curious if this is kind of what the part of how they feel like they want to combat all these arm issues the pitchers are having. Maybe they feel like giving them a few months off before returning in the fall could help out instead of having guys, you know, pitching year round and throwing all the time and that kind of thing. So guys like Cole Henry, Landon Marceau, Eric Walker, Devin Fontenot, Matt Beck, you know, all the main guys in that rotation and bullpen are all taking the summer off. The one exception seems to be Jaden Hill, who's going to stay around here and work on his rehab. And they left the door open to if he feels up to it at some point this summer, he may start a throwing program. So it's kind of interesting to me that, you know, while there's no big picture changes to the coaching staff, or at least not right now, they are clearly tweaking some of the ways they do things to kind of combat the arm injuries that have kind of derailed the last two seasons. Another thing that was really interesting to me is Paul Maneri said that they are currently scouring the country looking for another infielder or two, preferably one that could play shortstop. Obviously, they lost three infielders to the MLB draft. One current, two signees they lost to the MLB draft. They get that right. They clearly are kind of, I thought that was also a little bit of a message to the current guys, like, the Gavin Dugan and Drew Bianco of the world, that, hey, you guys don't get better. You're not just going to get a role, a bigger role, because you were a backup and the guy ahead of you graduated or moved on to the MLB. So that was interesting to me. And also, a more subtle thing that I think really bears watching, LSU's kind of built this roster the same way in terms of, I don't want to get too in the weeds here, but basically the amount of roster spots and scholarships they've allotted to pitchers the last few years has not changed. It's been very pitcher heavy. But with so many pitchers coming back next year, that were experienced guys from this year, they're going to kind of roll the dice a little bit and spend a lot more of that roster spots and scholarship money on position players in hopes of fielding a deeper lineup. But I kind of found that interesting, considering the way the last 2 years have gone.
And I do want to double back to that. We will in a moment on how they kind of allot that 11.7 scholarship number. But, James, you and I, look, we've sat in the same seat as the editor of Tiger Rag, so I know that you mainly report the news, but then also you'll write columns and give opinions. So putting that hat on, do you think there need to be changes to this coaching staff? And I would imagine, if so, it would be in the way of a hitting coach. Your thoughts on that subject?
No, honestly, if you want my opinion, I think that's maybe the most over-talked about thing in all of LSU sports, bar none. The idea of LSU needing or should upgrade as a hitting coach, I'm not here to tell you that Chonachenko is a great hitting coach, or I'm here to tell you the hitting coaches, especially at the college level, it just doesn't really make that much of a difference. Especially because at the end of the day, the guy who's going to pick the big picture approach for the lineup and construct the lineup and kind of, the one who is ultimately deciding the things that, is kind of the core principles of the team is Paul Maneri. I mean, he is essentially the hitting coach. Not obviously, Sean's the guy working with them one-on-one and spending time with them in the cage and watching the film, that kind of stuff. But really, Paul Maneri is the guy that's above him and then the guy running the offense, so to speak. It's kind of the analogy I would use is he's kind of like, Sean's like the offensive coordinator, but the head coach is the offensive coach, is the guy calling the plays, to kind of give you a, not apples to apples, but a pretty decent comparison. So, also, he's a volunteer assistant, so they can't really go out and throw a bunch of money at a more experienced guy, even if they wanted to. Obviously, they'd be great. You only get two full-time assistants in college baseball. If one of them's not your pitching coach, when you have a head coach who is not a pitching expert, that'd be pretty insane. I think we could all, and I don't think I need to explain why you need a pitching coach when you need a full-time pitching coach. And in terms of having a full-time recruiting coordinator instead of a full-time hitting coach, I personally think it's worked out pretty well for LSU when you look at the kind of high-end talent they've brought in. They just haven't been able to keep that high-end talent healthy.
Knocking it out of the park. He is James Moran of Tiger Rag Magazine. Now let's get back to the scholarship allotment. And I'm sure many would ask this question, so I'll pose it to you. If they're going to
I cannot tell you how many scholarships certain guys have. Let me just throw that out there.
Absolutely. No. Here's the okay.
Okay.
I guess I would just ask you this question. How are they going to fix the left-handed pitcher issue absence if they're going to spend more scholarships on everyday players in the field? That would be my question.
Well, one of them is they're just going to get Easton McMurray back healthy. And they also have another signee who is left-handed coming in. So they will have two next year. Whether or not one of them pitches well and earns himself a role, that much will have to be determined in the fall. But I think the plan was they thought Easton McMurray was going to be their left-handed guy this year. And obviously he had season endings. He showed up with an injury and was out for the year before opening day. I would say that, look at 2 years ago, or not this season, but last season, they had six left-handers on the staff, so they went and none of them were any good outside of Nick Bush. So it's not as simple, I think, as just kind of stockpiling guys who throw left-handed. You got to find at least one or two, maybe, that can get some guys out.
If I'm not mistaken, yesterday, James, when we had our mutual friend Hunt Palmer on, his early projection at the starting rotation in some order was Marceau, Henry, and Walker. Any reason to disagree or maybe some additional thoughts from you?
No, I would say the same thing. I think it would be Henry, Marceau, Walker would be my Henry and Marceau. I don't think I'd really need to explain why those guys are at the top of the rotation. But Walker, I think the expectation is that he will, after taking the summer off, be a much more like he was in 2017 next year. And there's a lot of baseball data to kind of back that up, both in Major League, college, any of that. Guys are, you know, they can pitch their first year after Tommy John, but normally it's that second year where they get their control back, they get their stamina back, they start having the same kind of stuff that they had beforehand. I mean, if you watch Walker pitch this year, he'd have days. They have days where he was borderline dominant. I mean, I remember, you know, he was dominant at Mississippi State. He was dominant against Auburn and on the last season weekend of the regular season. I mean, he had his moments, but he wasn't consistent, and it seemed like there'd be a lot of starts like what we saw in the regional where he'd go through the lineup once, nine up, nine down, and then it would all just kind of fall apart for him. So I think taking the summer off and all that kind of stuff will get him back to where he needs to be next year in terms of arm strength, in terms of getting back to the pitcher he was in 2017. The wild card of the whole thing, obviously, is Jaden Hill, because he has nasty stuff, but he only started two games this year before getting hurt, and we haven't really seen him since. If he's healthy, I think he would definitely be a threat to take one of those rotation spots, but I think people that are just going to pencil him in without us having seen him pitch since February, that to me seems a little over-aggressive, if you kind of get what I'm saying.
James, your odds on pick to win the College World Series is who?
Right now? If I'm going to play the odds, I would definitely bet on Florida State. I just think they have real Team of Destiny vibes. They got a real nice number. I was pretty impressed with some of what I saw when they were here. And, you know, baseball's a weird sport. When you're doing stuff like playing for the coach that's going to retire as the all-time winningest coach without a championship, a lot of times in baseball they go win that championship. Maybe that's just me.
Maybe that's just the
writer in me. But if I was going to put some money down, weren't they were better than 10-1, right? Weren't they like 12-1, 13-1, something in there? Yeah, that's where I would. If I was going to throw $20 on one of these teams to win the College World Series, give me the plus. I mean, the data supports it. The last 3 years, the team that's knocked LSU out is going on to win the national championship. So I would like the odds, and I would take Florida State. If I was going to go the more conventional route, I would probably take Arkansas.
In a little less than an hour, we're going to Omaha to talk to our guy Hunter Paniagua. So we'll see what Mr. Bread and Water has to say.
He's my best Omaha Hunter.
Omaha Hunter.
I was looking forward to seeing him, but maybe next year.
Hey, before we let you go, the people, they come for the LSU baseball talk. They stay for MLB Yankees conversation with you and I. What should we expect from that group the rest of the regular season and postseason?
From the Yankees? Oh, I think they're going to win the East. I think whether or not they can win the World Series or not might come down to who they can add as a pitcher at the deadline, because I'm not really in love with this rotation as it currently stands. I mean, I don't know if they're getting Severino back. Now, Domingo Herman is hurt. J.A. Happ hasn't been any good. James Paxton's been mediocre and injured. I mean, I don't love this rotation at the moment. I think now if you can go get me a Madison Bumgarner, then we can talk about some different things, Ben. But right now, I think they're a division winner who could get hot and win it, but I don't love the rotation as it currently stands.
We carry the Stros on this station and talk about them a bunch.
They have a much better rotation.
Well, what would you make out of Astros, Yankees, ALCS?
I think you have to give the advantage to the Astros at this exact moment, but then again, you probably would have given the advantage to LSU when they were hosting Florida State. We all saw that worked out. Baseball is a weird sport, but I do like that the Yankees have the best bullpen in baseball, and you know they're going to get some of their guys back relatively soon, so that'll be fun to see, because they pretty much stayed in first place with a half of their lineup coming from AAA.
Nothing you ever write or say will be as true as baseball is a weird sport. I'm going to co-sign that.
Well, it's been fun, Ben. I appreciate you bringing me on all year, man.
Hey, thank you for doing this. On your way out, tell our listeners about the podcast. It's been refreshed.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
New.
We've cranked it back up. It kind of died when our website died a few months back, but we've cranked it back up recently, the Tiger Rag podcast. You can get it on. I know it's on everything except maybe iTunes. We're still getting it processed there where you can search it, but just look it up, Tiger Rag Podcast. It's me, it's Tyler Nunez. We're going to do at least one a week all summer. We're going to try to stay away from doing the boring just 2 months of football preview. So we're going to try to get some different guests on, try to do some different interesting things. But if you want to hear a longer form version of a lot of the things I just said, I did do kind of a full 2020 baseball preview earlier this week. So you could go listen to that, the Tiger Rag Podcast, available pretty much wherever podcasts are.
James, I appreciate you. Acadiana does as well. Thank you, my man.
No problem, Ben. Enjoy your summer, buddy.
I'm hanging out at Rufino's on the river, getting paid to talk sports. Yeah, I'm enjoying this moment. And, James, I will enjoy my summer. Our thanks again to the editor of Tiger Rag Magazine. Trust me when I tell you, that is a difficult and then all at the same time very rewarding and fun job. The editor of the Bible of LSU Sports. Our thanks again to James Moran. All right, first break in hour number one. When we return, let's keep kicking around some of the conversation we had from hour one. We still got shade to throw, and we will consult Oma Hunter. Yeah, Hunter Paniagua at straight up 6 o'clock. You're listening to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back out to Rufino's on the River on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
From college baseball to professional golf and one of the four majors being contested right now at one of the most beautiful golf courses on planet Earth, Pebble Beach in Northern California. Time to get you an update. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're right back to Rufino's on the River on 103.7 The Game. People hanging out here certainly enjoying and celebrating life. Wine by the glass is half off for the next hour and 10 minutes during my show. Come out and join us if you can. All right, you were promised an update. Clint, I know, is ready to deliver.
Oh, trust me, Ben. You're talking about celebrating life. I think Justin Rose isn't necessarily celebrating it right now because Louis Oosthuizen, he's right on his heels. Of course, Justin Rose, the leader in the clubhouse. His second round is done. Was 1 under, and he's 7 under overall in the tournament. Oosthuizen, 2 holes in, and he is currently at 6 under, 1 stroke behind Rose. And then you look at kind of the way things have kind of shaken out with the tied for third, and this is going to round out your top five. Ricky Fowler, Xander Schauffele, Aaron Wise, and Scott Piercy, they're all at 5 under. And, of course, Tiger Woods, as mentioned earlier, his day wrapped up much earlier today. He's at even, and the projected cut I don't think really has changed from being at +3 at this time.
There you have it. U.S. Open in Pebble Beach, or at Pebble Beach, and right now 7 under the mark to beat. Looks like 3 over might be the projected cut line. Going to let you hear from some of the golfers. These first two clips were from yesterday, right after round one. And let's go to Tiger. He has no problem telling you, first 18 holes were a grind.
Pebble Beach, you have like the first 7 holes and you can get it going. And then after that, it's a fight. And I felt like I putted well, but, you know, I was trying to just kind of hang in there today.
Another soundbite following the first round came from Ricky Fowler, and it's all about starting to get comfortable at Pebble Beach, maybe somewhat akin to what Tiger just said.
Played well here before. It's been a few years since I've been here, and I feel like I'm in a really good spot on the course with my game, having a little bit of off weeks, been able to get some really good work in, and you know, like I said, in a good spot on the golf course, away from the golf course, so I'm just looking forward to continuing it, what we started today. I'm very happy with our game plan, how we stuck to it, and how we executed today.
And now we're going to get you some sound that is fresh from today. One of the golfers that's already gone through his 36th hole, and it's a guy who just won a major himself within the last month. Brooks Koepka likes to let his play do the talking for him. We got a couple of different sound bites. Again, this is Brooks Koepka today following round two at Pebble Beach, and I'm as interested to hear this as you are after I introduce it. Koepka not frustrated with shots that weren't falling.
I'm good at this patient game. So I know you just need to be hanging around on the weekend. And, you know, if as long as they're good putts, that's fine. They were coming off right where I wanted to. Speed seemed pretty solid. And, you know, the point is tough to putt on. It kind of does bounce a little bit. Not making excuses. They were good putts. But, you know, you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. They might all fall.
Kind of a mixture there of maybe Nick Saban and Kawhi Leonard, right? A mixture of, hey, it's all about the process. If they don't fall, they don't fall. I'm not getting frustrated about it. Then, of course, there's the whole cyborg, robotic style of answer from Brooks Koepka. But that's an interesting concept. I get it. But interesting to hear him say it, not frustrated that shots weren't falling. Basically, I'm doing things the right way. Wait for it. And one more from Brooks Koepka, his overall thoughts on the second round that he authored at Pebble.
I don't mind it if I'm going to hit good putts and they're just going to miss. And, you know, that happened today. Ball striking was tremendously better today. I was very pleased with it. I don't know how many greens I hit and how many fairways I hit, but I felt like I was on the green quite a bit. Never really felt like I had to work. It was quite an easy round.
There you have it. And so Clint gave you a leaderboard update. Just got to hear from Ricky Fowler, Tiger Woods, Brooks Koepka. Two of those three have won majors already in this 2019 season cycle on the PGA. And we'll continue to give you updates throughout the show, but boy, do we have some things planned over the next hour as well. In addition to U.S. Open updates, we're going to throw some shade when we come back. And we were almost exclusive in hour one on the NBA Finals. There's one way that I haven't sliced it yet, and I will when we return. So trust me, when we throw some shade, you'll want to buckle up. Not just will I go in on a national, what should we call him, carnival barker, but also on a former New Orleans Pelican. And yeah, already some of you could probably guess the tree that I'll bark up there. Going to have some fun throwing shade today. Also, before we exit hour number two, going to play back some of Sam Spiegelman from yesterday. Sam does a great job canvassing Louisiana and Texas football recruiting, and he gives you the lowdown on both states' best that'll be playing for LSU this fall. So for those that missed it yesterday at 5 o'clock, we're going to run it back today at about 5:45. So in 20 minutes, you want to get your daily LSU football fix? Trust me, you will. And then at straight up 6 o'clock, Hunter Paniagua, digital sports contributor for the Omaha World Herald. Got to get his take on the College World Series. The field begins play tomorrow from TD Ameritrade. Who's his favorite? How bummed is he? Plus, you didn't make it. And has he made it out to Barrett's Barleycorn? A couple of brews before the 2019 CWS. Plenty of show to go before the Astros begin their first game of a weekend set at home versus the Toronto Blue Jays. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, hanging out, having fun, and celebrating life at Ruffino's on the river. And we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Stop yapping and get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Back in with a quick Astros update, and then I'll throw shade twice over related to the NBA Finals. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game, hanging out and having fun at Ruffino's on the River. Always a pleasure, and some people coming, enjoying their weekend, getting started right on time. Wine by the glass still half off. Come and join the crowd here at Ruffino's on the River. All right, here is your update for the Astros, and it's funny. I love when we tease something on the show that comes true. We got friends in high places. Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle being one of them. He joined us earlier in the week, Chandler did, and said everything the Astros are doing with their draft picks is geared toward being able to spend more money than the slot value dictates for their fourth rounder. talking about Colin Barber. Well, they got that deal done. Announced about 30 minutes ago, the Astros have signed, fourth rider Colin Barber for $1 million. Slot value for his pick was $410,000. They're big on him, and they undersigned a lot of their guys, even by as much as $500,000 for their first overall pick, our first rounder. He was 32nd overall, the catcher from Cal. But this is interesting. Chandler's been telling us it was coming today. It happened. So way to call your shot there, Chandler Rome. Fourth round pick Colin Barber has signed for $1 million, and that is more than double what his slot value would have dictated. All right, let's get right down to brass tacks. Before I throw the shade, your daily reminder. No one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the Cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. And how refreshing that is in 2019, the world we live in. The team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game, and they could probably even do it before Labor Day and this football season, but only if you hurry. And I mean right now. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Skip Bayless, it is time that you go crawl under a rock for your horrid takes. Just defaming Kawhi Leonard. I get it that you're a Texas guy. Anybody messes with your Dallas Cowboys, well, you get big mad and you throw a real little child fit. Anybody messes with your San Antonio Spurs, apparently, ditto. Here's just a taste of what Skip Bayless had on Twitter last night, just about as the game was ending. Number two just proved that basketball crime pays. Sometimes good things happen to bad guys. Go Spurs, go. Hope you enjoyed him, Toronto. Now he'll quit on you too. Kyle Lowry deserves MVP. Toronto's closer was always Van Vliet, not number two. Seriously, he wasn't even done after that. Listen to this. I still can't figure out how number two won his first finals MVP. He wasn't the Spurs' leading scorer in that finals. Tony Parker was. Number two was the third leading rebounder. Duncan averaged 15 and 10. Number two was third in plus-minus. Manu was first. Number two, quote-unquote, held LeBron to 28 a game. MVP, question mark, question mark, question mark. That is some of the most just outright hating I have seen in a long time. He won't even say the man's name. Just kept calling him number two. Well, to you now, Skip, that is two-time finals MVP Kawhi Leonard. You won't say his name. I will. Absolute homer takes at their finest from Skip Bayless, who is supposed to be running a national show. And speaking of shade, here's part due, all related to the NBA Finals. Remember way back when Boogie Cousins turned down, reportedly, 2 years and $40 million from the Pelicans so that he could go take $5 million and chase that ring by the Bay? How you like me now, Boogie? And how'd that go for you, big fella? Couple of leg injuries later, a runner-up finish for the Larry O'Brien Trophy later, and you're wondering if you're going to have a home or if you're at a place where the ring is that easily acquired. Wasn't so easy this first time around. And while I might feel for the guys who've been injured, like KD, like Clay, and even for Steph, who's been a warrior through it all and has been pretty darn classy about it, even if I like the fighting spirit of Draymond Green, you'll not find an ounce of me that feels sympathy for Boogie Cousins in any of this. Funny thing is, probably worked out the way that it needed to for the Pels, for Anthony Davis, and all parties involved. Dell Demps is gone. David Griffin is here. Zion Williamson is coming. And you don't have to worry about either of those Twin Towers and their losing ways, these Cats from Kentucky. And so, Boogie, on a day like this, I'm not going to rub it in too much more than I already have, but you reap what you sow.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
2 years, $40 million, play with a good friend of yours? Nah, I'm going to go get that easy ring. Not so easy after all. All right, we'll take our final break of hour two. When we return, going to talk a little LSU football. Get you ready for freshmen that'll be playing before you know it inside Tiger Stadium, maybe even a few of them. In fact, definitely a few of them in Austin for week two. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. We'll be right back out to Ruffino's on the River.
Show.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Loff on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at
103.7 The Game.
All right, let's get a little football conversation in our life, shall we? Bumper to Bumper Sports back having fun at Ruffino's on the River, and a lot of people starting to come in for the reservations, looking out over the river. It's beautiful this afternoon. It's going to be a great night as well. Glad to have you with us on 103.7 The Game. Yesterday, Sam Spiegelman covers Texas, Louisiana, yeah, pretty important states when it comes to recruiting, for Rivals.com, part of the Yahoo Network, and he had some interesting things to say on kids that'll be playing this year. And so really, I'm using his expertise on recruiting to inform what you should expect right away from first-year players. Let's dive right in. And most people are pretty enthused about John Emery Jr., five-star running back, top two back in the country out of Destrehan High. But as you hear in this soundbite, don't forget about Ty Davis from Southern Lab.
I think we are all waiting to see John Emery and what he's able to bring to that offense. Obviously, in my opinion, the best running back in the country last year. There's nothing that John Emery cannot do. But someone I know that Tommy Robinson is very excited about, I think it's because he can relate to the style of running, is Ty Davis. 6'1", 225 pounds. He's a bowling ball, but he's super athletic. He can catch the football. He can run out to the outside of the boundary. I think it's definitely a big backfield by committee, for sure, between all those guys. So Leonard is my sleeper to kind of have a pretty big role down the stretch.
How about that? Leonard Fournette might find his way into some action. Let's get some more from Sam Spiegelman. These questions were all geared toward freshmen for the most part, and the most celebrated freshman, maybe since Leonard Fournette, to come into the program is Derek Stingley Jr. from the Dunham School in Baton Rouge. And it goes without saying, dude's going to be CB1, CB2. Give him an island, he's a starting cornerback. I'll contend that he's the front runner to return punts right away. I asked Sam, are you hearing the same thing? Do you agree?
Yeah, basically the first, after he signed his letter of intent, he was at LSU the same day. And he started to field punts, and he is going to be in that role. They are going to find ways to get him the ball any way they can, whether it's returns or, you know, letting him play in the secondary. At one point, I do know that the coaches had proposed to the Stingley family that there could be a role on offense for him. So the Derek, I think this is not easy to say, but watching Derek Stingley in high school might have been as or more exciting than Leonard Fournette. And I know that sounds crazy. Leonard was a beast man amongst boys playing at St. Aug. But Stingley played a different position where it's harder for him to have an impact out in the secondary. And as a junior, 11 picks in 11 games. And then last year, everyone knew who he was, the number one prospect in the country. It's very easy. Just don't let him get the ball. Don't throw it in his direction. And he still managed to be an all-state five-star recruit, lived up to the hype week in and week out, and basically carried his team on his back. You know, obviously he had great coaching and great teammates, but all the production that he was single-handedly able to create on his own, it's just remarkable, you know, in his own right.
And an interesting transition I'll make for you here. From the best in Louisiana last year to one of the absolute best in Texas, a beast, Marcel Brooks. And I've been hearing very big things. I know the expectations are high for that young man. I'll let Sam expound on what makes him special and also give a comparison to a guy that currently laces it up for Dave Aranda and LSU's defense.
Marcel Brooks, I didn't know what position he was. He played mostly wide receiver last year for Flower Mound. He is listed as a safety at LSU. We ranked him as a five-star outside linebacker. He is a dominating football player, and I think he could do that in four or five different positions on the field, which speaks volumes about just how talented he is naturally. He's about 6'2", 200 pounds when he signed with LSU. Now, like, as you alluded to, he's in the Tommy Moffitt program, so I wouldn't be surprised if he bulked up to about 206, 208. He has 4-5 speed. He can cover. He can blitz. If he hits you, you probably won't get up. I know that I wouldn't get up. He can catch the football. He can make plays on offense or defense. I know that LSU, right now, if you look up and down their roster, one of the things the coaches look at is another playmaker at the safety position opposite of Grant Delpit. Obviously, Grant Delpit is the best safety in college football going into his junior year. They're looking for a counterpart, whether it's Jacoby Stevens or Marcel Brooks or Todd Harris. Remains to be seen. It's hard for a freshman to make an impact like Grant Delpit did a year ago. But whether it's this year or in spurts this year or as a sophomore, he is very capable of changing the game on defense, much like Grant Delpit did a year ago.
How about that? A little Grant Delpit comparison. Just based off of impact, the guy, I think, is a defensive torpedo. Where do you line him up? Take your pick. You might just have options. One more from Sam Spiegelman. He joined us yesterday, but I wanted to run it back, inject a little football directly into the veins on a Friday as you get ready for your weekend. And I'll stay in the secondary. I made him give me one player that we're not talking about that maybe we should be. And I gave him carte blanche, except for Cade York. I said, you can't take the kicker. We know he's going to start. But I said, give me one guy we're not talking about. And he chose to go with a member of the secondary. He chose to go with Cordell Flott.
Okay, so obviously all of our attention is on Derek Stingley Jr., and for a good reason, right? The other incoming freshman defensive back that I have heard a ton of good things about is Cordell Flott. He was someone that early on Tommy Robinson identified in Alabama. And, you know, Corey Raymond liked him at first. Obviously, they took his commitment around this time last year when he worked out at the elite camp. But he's been working together with Derek Stingley. All their workouts have been together. He's been driving back and forth between Saraland and Baton Rouge over the spring and into the summer. He's put on some weight, and they think that's going to be that 1-2 punch on the outside, a boundary corner for the next couple of years between Stingley and Flott. Obviously, they also took Ra'Darius Jones and Mo Hampton, and they'll plug them in to the secondary when the time comes. But Flott, I could see earning some snaps as a true freshman, and maybe it'll be as a sophomore. But he is learning behind the scenes and learning from Derek Stingley. That sounds like a promising recipe to be a really good cornerback in the SEC down the road.
Hey, maybe there was a reason after all, a week or so ago, that Kelvin Joseph flirted with putting his name into the NC2A transfer portal. So we're getting closer to football. Trust me, within a month's time, SEC Media Days will be here. That's officially when talking season kicks off. But you're fortunate because your boy already set us on that track. I did it Tuesday. I told you, Monday, you could bitch and whine about LSU baseball. I let you do it. A lot of calls since, not as many calls the last four shows, but really an influx of football talk and just starting to get ready for football season. We've done it on all three levels. A lot of high school talk yesterday with Blaine Viator. Of course, the update that Trev Falk, that suspension upheld, the appeal not won by LCA, so he will not be able to lead that team next year. We talked about that with Blaine Viator yesterday. We've had plenty of college football conversation. I did, for a little bit, have Brandon Taylor lined up to talk some LSU football today. He couldn't quite make it. We're going to run that back with the former LSU number 18 next week. Talk some UL on Tuesday, and a good bit of Saints this week. Interviews with Sharif Eishak and Larry Holder. Yeah, football coming before you know it. As we wind down hour two, an interesting tidbit. Texas and Texas A&M have agreed to play this December, but it's basketball. Nope, those two, Longhorns, Aggies, they're not getting back together, I don't think, anytime soon on the gridiron. But I do find this fascinating. Texas and Texas A&M are going to play December 8th live at Dickey's Arena in Fort Worth. So TCU opening a brand new arena. I believe the Horned Frogs are going to be playing a few nights earlier against USC to kind of christen it. I don't believe it's a tournament, but still, they're going to get good use out of that building. UT and A&M playing on a neutral floor, kind of ending the standoff that those two programs have had recently, but they're going to do it on the hardwood, not the gridiron. Of course, A&M's going to have a first-year head coach in Buzz Williams. Texas is still rocking Shaka Smart. Will Wade came off that tree at VCU, so I just found that interesting. Wanted to share it with you. Texas and A&M playing each other in basketball toward the very beginning of the season on December the 8th. Again, don't expect that anytime soon in football, especially not a neutral site game. All right, we are 2 hours strong. We have 35 minutes to go. Taking you out to Omaha on the other side of this hour break, Hunter Paniagua with the Omaha World Herald. He and I spent a lot of time working together back in the gap for Scout.com, covering LSU sports and recruiting. These days, he oversees all things sports in Omaha, Nebraska. And, of course, this week, next 2 weeks, that means the College World Series. Don't go anywhere. Bumper to Bumper Sports coming right back at you live from Rufino's on the River on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Final hour of the day and the week. Let's get after it. Bumper to Bumper Sports right back in to Rufino's on the River. And always coming at you on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love here at Rufino's. Got to give a nod to the famous Clint D keeping us rolling from inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. LSU didn't make the College World Series, to the chagrin of everybody within earshot of my voice. I know. But still, the CWS, it must go on, and we must continue an annual tradition. Our pleasure to welcome aboard the ARTCO Equipment Hotline, Hunter Paniagua, digital sports coordinator for the Omaha World Herald. Hunter, it's great to have you back. How are you, my man?
I'm doing good, Ben. It's always good to hear your voice. And I will say that the disappointment was felt up here as well when LSU did not make it. Not only for this LSU grad, but for the many businesses and bars and restaurants that love to have the LSU fans up here. So that's definitely a shared disappointment all around.
I'm glad you brought that up. So does Barrett's Barleycorn just lose out on $10,000 or $20,000 with the omission of LSU?
I think so, because I came up here several times to the World Series before I ever moved up here permanently, and I thought Barrett's Barleycorn must be the most top-end bar in the entire city. And then I move up here, and no one even goes there, really, at least in my friend group, so it's really not as bumping as it usually is. But then, yeah, when LSU's here, it's packed wall-to-wall every day that they're here. So I imagine that's probably where the biggest disappointment is felt in that bar specifically, because it's a weird little phenomenon. It's this LSU bar whenever it's here, but otherwise it's just kind of this divey bar that no one really goes to as much, so... They're definitely disappointed over there.
I think they owe Charlie Haniger some royalties, but that's a different story for a different program. let's set the scene on the 8-team field. Tomorrow, Texas Tech, Michigan, the early game, Arkansas versus Florida State, the late game. Other half of the bracket plays on Sunday, Vandy versus Louisville, Mississippi State versus Auburn. Give me the tougher bracket of those two, Hunter.
Probably the second bracket with Mississippi State and Vanderbilt. I think you probably put those two teams probably up there with Arkansas as your three favorites going in. So the fact that one of those two between the Bulldogs and Commodores has to has to go through each other to get to the championship series. It's probably the harder side.
Talking with Hunter Paniagua with the Omaha World Herald previewing the CWS, and it begins tomorrow, 1 p.m. Central, is the first game, Texas Tech versus Michigan. All right, all that said, give me the SEC team with the best chance to win it all.
I've been going back and forth on this one. I'm going to say Arkansas. Arkansas has probably been my pick, largely because, like I said, they're in a little bit more favorable bracket on the first day. They have this bad taste in their mouth that I'm sure they never got rid of from last year, which could either help them or hurt them. I think it's going to motivate them, and they've been pretty dominant throughout this point in the tournament. Dave Van Horn knows his way around the block. He's no stranger to Nebraska and Omaha. So I think I'm going to go with Arkansas. Of all the SEC teams, of all four of them, I'm going to go with them. Though I'd say Vanderbilt or Mississippi State, whichever one comes out of that side, if it's one of those two, would be a pretty formidable matchup too.
Very interested in your thoughts on Mike Martin and that Florida State baseball program. Give me some insight, what you think about them historically, and then maybe kind of what they're on the cusp of this year.
Yeah, what an interesting, incredible story. I mean, from my own personal standpoint, I wish they weren't here, because I'd much rather have LSU made it instead of them. But, I mean, you got to, anytime you're talking about great coaches in the game, it's Mike Martin is near the top of that. And it's almost remarkable to have a coach who's been around for 40 years at one school, won more games than any coach in any sport in the history of Division I college, and he's never won a national championship. So you almost got to think, is the final of the year, is the storybook that good, or is it going to be another disappointment for him at the end? I think that team has definitely got a little bit of destiny behind them. I mean, you don't go on the road both in the regional and super regional and come to Omaha without fighting your asses off. And I think they may have some of that mojo that they got, but I think Mike Martin, not that his legacy is up for grabs or anything. I mean, he's going to go in, whether he retires, as one of the best ever. But for him to go off on a high note and win that national championship that deluded him for so long, I mean, you can't write better endings than that.
Hunter, we need to know about the fan support that's in town so far. How would you rank the colors and the teams that have filed in?
It's pretty good. This is a unique year, because yesterday we had the MLB regular season between the Royals and the Tigers, which is the first time they've done that, played at TD Ameritrade Park. Restaurants that people like to frequent, seeing quite a few, which I knew going into this, and this is going to be one of our better fields from a fan perspective. I mean, Mississippi State and Arkansas are obvious. I think you're starting to get more. Texas Tech's been here quite a few times. I think they're starting to get used to coming up here. Florida State, maybe they're going to be some fans. Special year for them. Auburn hadn't been here. Auburn and Michigan haven't been here in so long. They've got to be probably excited to get here too. So I'm expecting it to be a lot of full stadiums, a lot of rock crowds. Kind of like, and if you get those SEC teams playing, it might feel like Hoover's final few games of the tournament with how packed and how SEC heavy it's going to be.
Another moment or two with Hunter Paniagua with the Omaha World Herald. If I'm not mistaken, did Darren Erstad just step down from Nebraska not long ago? Catch me up on that storyline.
He sure did. About 2 weeks ago, Darren Erstad, longtime big leaguer and Nebraska alum, he stepped down, wanted to spend more time with his family. As you can imagine, he came pretty much straight out of his playing career and got into coaching, so he's been go, go, go his life. So he stepped down a couple weeks ago. They just hired their new coach today. For SEC fans, you might recognize the name Will Bolt. He's been assistant at Texas A&M for the last 4 or 5 years, I believe. So, it's a lot of changes going up here in Nebraska. That's what I live all day, all night, is Husker stuff nowadays, which is kind of sickening at times. But there's been a lot of changes between Scott Frost and the football team, Fred Hoiberg and the basketball team. Now we got Will Bolt and the baseball team. So that's definitely some bigger news that people up here are interested in.
While I've got you here, I get to pick your brain on a little LSU football. I'll get your vote of confidence on Ed Ogeron and maybe how things have changed, if they have changed at all, since he was named the head coach from interim and then where things are today.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on board the O train. I haven't lost faith. I got here last week to get to 10 wins in a bowl game, and now he's recruiting is on fire lately from what I've been gathering, so you got to feel good about the future. But, yeah, it's, you know, after – covering the football team, let's see, for how long I did, 5 or 6 years in college, out of college, and now to to see it from a fan's perspective. It's a lot more heart-wrenching to go by week being an LSU football fan, but I think they're on the right track. And the biggest thing I love about Coach O, and it's kind of a similar situation to what they have here with Scott Frost in Nebraska, but you have that kind of passion that he has for school, for someone that's a hometown, home state team. And I think that goes a long way, but obviously he needs to coach well and win games, but at least you have that kind of fundamental passion that he has, and I support that, and I like that.
All right, one more before we let you go. We touched on LSU baseball, the disappointment of not making it to Omaha, and it seems like Maneri doesn't believe there will be any change to his staff. So what would your outlook be for the program going forward?
Oh, it's going to be tough next year. We're losing all our hitters that I've ever heard there this past year. And they just want to play in etc. But it's got to get better about the day. Probably the biggest issue they have is the top line eight that they've always had. All those young guys will come back, and maybe one of them, or even two of them, maybe even three of them, could really be that dominant SEC pitcher that we're kind of used to. So it's going to be challenging. I mean, a lot of them have to replace, but maybe that pitching staff can carry them a little bit. But yeah, I think this was the year that I felt really good about them coming, and they didn't. They let me down, so it's going to be tough going forward.
You know, it's funny you say that. We had James Moran on earlier, and he said, man, I was looking forward to going to see Omaha Hunter. He said we may have to wait another year. He literally just told us that about an hour ago.
Yeah, when you put out that tweet that we're both going to be on the show, I talked to James all the time. So he was looking forward to maybe sleeping on my couch for a couple of days after the bars, and he can't get back to his own hotel. He's not going to get that chance this year. So maybe next year we'll get him all back up here and have a good time in Omaha.
That's a hell of a game plan. Hunter, thanks again for doing this. Enjoy the next couple of weeks out in Omaha. Look forward to checking in again soon. Continued success.
Absolutely. Good talking to you, Ben.
Love catching up with him. Hunter Paniagua, spent some time together, we did, and covering a lot of LSU football together. Me, LSU basketball and recruiting. Him, LSU baseball and recruiting. So, yeah. It's a guy that you could definitely hunker down in a trench with, works his butt off, and so happy to see what he's doing these days. Again, Hunter, the digital sports coordinator for the Omaha World Herald, and I'm kind of right there with him. I think if I had to pick a team right now, Arkansas looks about as good as anybody to me. I like that James Moran said if I'm playing the numbers and the odds, I might take a flyer on Florida State. Hey, he can have that one. Not sure I am quite as much on board. All right, we're going to take one final break. When we return, how about this? The week that was. Yeah, I know. We're copping it straight from the Jim Rome Show. Don't care at all because we got our own localized thoughts on that subject. So don't go anywhere. Ben and Clint coming right back, taking you home and into your weekend. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live from Rufino's on the River on 103.7 The Game.
Let's go, people.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Right back at it. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live at Rufino's on the River on 103.7 The Game. Time to take a spin around the week that was. And I'm going to let Clint tell us where the wheel lands. But the options are these. LSU baseball officially came to an end. We've been doing some post-op, some brief previews of what comes in 2020. And included within that, we now know that Saul Garza will be returning amongst the current players that were drafted. You continue to spin the wheel. Yeah, we got the U.S. Open, and we're not quite halfway home from Pebble Beach, but some not-so-surprising names toward the top of the leaderboard. Finally, we've got first-time NHL and NBA champs, and they both did it on the road. So, CD, you spin the wheel. Where does it land?
I think I kind of want to start things off just looking at LSU baseball. The season came to a disappointing end, and it just makes you wonder, like last year when we talked about at the end of the year after losing to Oregon State and the way things kind of happened, was where are we going to wind up going now? You see a lot of these guys decide to come back for their senior season, namely the biggest one being Antoine Duplantis, Zach Hess. What happens now, more specifically, when you look at the arms for 2020? That's kind of the biggest thing that I'm just zeroed in on heading into next year, is what happens with these arms, namely your Devin Fontenot's, your Cole Henry's. What goes on with those guys going forward?
You know, it was interesting, to your point, to hear James Moran say earlier, they may solve kind of the lefty crisis. They got one that's coming in and one that they hope is getting healthier. But still, by and large, they're going to put their allotment of scholarships, they're going to put their resources they have left with this, you know, end of a recruiting class, if you will. They're putting a lot of eggs into the everyday players basket. So, again, they feel like they have the pitchers, the arms that they need. They're a little more slanted righty than they were maybe 2-3 years ago. But they're going to be going after infielders, and in particular, it sounds like a shortstop. All right, we'll spin the wheel again, and I'm going to land you on the U.S. Open. Your thoughts on what you've witnessed so far?
It's been impressive to see what we've seen from Rose, and a big surprise has to be without a doubt the fact you have the two-time defending champion Brooks Koepka, not necessarily being the absolute beast that we saw him be in Bethpage Black. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's become more of that long ball hitter. He can just like crush the golf ball. And in Bethpage Black, you have to do those kind of things. But in a course like the U.S. Open, you're seeing that not necessarily translate quite as well. And you're starting to see that because he's still in the top 10 or so. But it's showing that there's definitely a crowded house beyond what we're talking about when I was talking about Justin Rose. When you look at kind of the leaderboard and where things are set up, it's going to be a fun next couple days to see if Brooks Koepka can finally get it together and have those shots fall where he wants them to.
Two major winners so far from this year, both a bit off the pace. One of them in contention, as you mentioned, Koepka. The other, not exactly in Tiger Woods, hovering around even par. Again, he'll make the cut. Your projected line right now is at 3 over. So, you know, that would be a note for me, right? As Tiger Watch goes, he's not probable to make it into Saturday and especially into Sunday, really up there on the leaderboard in contention and pushing the needle as far as maybe the ratings go. But, boy, it's picturesque. Every time you turn the screen on, Pebble Beach is beautiful. I was out there late December, early January with my wife this past year, and I went there maybe about 10 years ago. Neither time did I play it. Both times just being in the vicinity, having a drink, hanging out around Pebble Beach. Beautiful and fantastic. All right, we spin it again. First time NHL and NBA champs. I'll let you choose which one you want to go in on first.
I think I kind of want to go in on the NHL side of things with the St. Louis Blues. I'm going to do something a little different. We're going to kind of do it a little bit differently, Ben, because, of course, it's going to be in, you're obviously going to have the St. Louis Blues have a big rally probably sometime early next week, and you'll be heading towards St. Louis late next week. And the Cardinals, they'll finally be back at home after kind of a little bit of a road trip. Do you think it winds up being on, like, middle of the week or late that week? You have the St. Louis Blues kind of throw out the first pitch then to kind of really start wrapping up the celebration of their first ever Stanley Cup.
Well, as you alluded to, I'm watching that very closely and monitoring. My gut tells me the parade comes prior to my arrival. And
obviously,
I'll be in St. Louis next Thursday, catching the Marlins Cards games at game at Busch on Thursday, and then it'll be about an hour east of town at a family reunion for the remainder of the weekend. But point being, I feel pretty certain I'm going to miss the parade, but I do think there's a decent chance. The Cardinals, you got to keep in mind, they start a 9-game homestand at Busch on Monday, 9 in a row, and they're going to have a lot of opportunities, therefore, to kind of honor the team, maybe bring out Lord Stanley's Cup. I'd love to see it Thursday at Busch, but my gut tells me it could happen on Wednesday. I'm hopeful that's not the case. So I know I'll miss the parade, but I am still hopeful that I'll catch them being feted Thursday at Busch. It's a good point from you. And I'll take the final spin of the wheel to the 2019 NBA champs, the Toronto Raptors. A lot of different ways you can look at this. One is to give praise to the first-time champs. To say that Kawhi Leonard led a team that was always just regular season monsters and then paper tigers in the postseason, he led them to pay dirt, and he led them through the Greek Freak in the conference finals, led them through Ben Simmons and that sort of big four in Philly, and eventually led them through an injury-plagued Golden State Warriors team. And, yeah, no question about it, that's the way that some will choose to remember these finals. Kevin Durant goes down with an Achilles tear, Klay Thompson with a torn ACL, and, boy, they really just never had too much of a chance. Will they be back? Time will tell. I think you and I both concurred in hour number one. Their championship window is not closed, but I'm not sure that it'll happen this year. Their chances may, they may lie with Kevin Durant returning and what happens in 2021.
And I have to agree with you right there, Ben. That's definitely the biggest thing when you look at just how the Golden State Warriors are going to be going forward. But, of course, flipping over to the Toronto Raptors, this is something we talked about a lot on Monday, kind of the what-if scenario, if you will, about the potential future of Kawhi Leonard. What happens with him now that he could wind up, is he going to wind up even testing free agency now that he's seen what he can wind up doing as the guy controlling this franchise right now with the Toronto Raptors, as opposed to maybe what he had early on in his career whenever he was kind of that bench guy who wound up having a lot of great roles with those San Antonio Spurs teams that knocked out the Miami Heat just a few short years ago? Does he wind up kind of switching over and jump towards free agency? That's definitely a big question that I'm going to tackle a lot more long form tomorrow under the dome.
There you have it. A look at the week that was. And, you know, before we hit our technical final break in the program, one other thing I'm seeing on social media that is super freaking cool. I've been telling you that Kevin Biggio and the Blue Jays are playing at Minute Maid. In fact, you're going to hear the game on Acadiana Sports Station, 7:10 first pitch, 6:35, just about 10 minutes from now, Astro launch from the Juice Box. But the cool thing is, inside of the merchandise areas, and you've been to Minute Maid recently, you know what I'm talking about. You go in, especially on that right field side, and then boom, there's a huge merchandising area. On the left-hand side of a rack, there are a bunch of Houston number 7 jerseys for Craig Biggio. On the right side, a bunch of Toronto number 8 jerseys for Kevin Biggio, his son, suiting up for the first time as a pro where his father played. I love that. So right now, imagine being out at Minute Maid. You got your choice. You can scoop a 7. You can scoop an 8. That's pretty darn cool. So Astros fans being treated to a bit of nostalgia tonight over at the ballpark. I know you're digging that.
Oh, it's awesome. And especially when you consider that this is probably what they thought about ahead of time once they found out he was called up. What's this coming weekend, Ben? It's Father's Day weekend, so the dad
can
get the Craig Biggio jersey, then he can give his son the Kevin Biggio. Be a really cool thing, to say the least.
It's a great point. It all ties in together for Father's Day, and that's one of the cool things about baseball. It really continues to be a great uniter. Pretty cool, and I'm excited to see exactly how not just this series goes, but I'm excited to see how young Kevin will perform. It's a very young Blue Jays team between him, Vlad Jr., speaking of a father-son connection. So, again, we'll just continue to listen to him on 103.7 The Game. No more LSU baseball. No, that's a bummer for just about everyone. But we'll continue to carry the Astros all summer long and into the fall. And hopefully they'll be playing some October baseball. Maybe even the rare and elusive early November baseball. Time will tell. It's a lot to ask. But a boy can dream. All right, we got to wrap it up. One final break and then one final world's shortest segment audition coming at you on the other side. We're hanging out at our usual Friday haunt. It's Ruffino's on the River. Wine by the glass, still half off, but you got to come and join us. It's a bar area that's so cool. Overlooks the river. It's beautiful and a lot of lovely people coming to take advantage of it on a Friday. We'll be right back in one final time. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Your NBC Sports Radio update starts now.